Welcome to Talk the Dog, the show where we find a bone to pick and a take to give. These are not hot takes. These is dog takes. Can I talk that dog? Let's shut up and grab some tape.
What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back in for the Local 45. We've had to talk that dog here on the Local Hours. Time to get into it. We got some more staff turnover in Athens announced today. David Pollock had some, quote, no shot thoughts, is what we're going to call those. When you say, so-and-so's got no shot, those thoughts coming tonight. Kirby, I feel like stowing up a little bit of harboring some feelings towards that take right about now.
I don't agree with that take.
All right, we're going to talk about that today. Hopefully you cool off by the time you give us a recap on media availability.
Oh, yeah.
Don't want too many flying takes on that one. We have commitment tape to watch. We're going to watch last night, but the ops was opping. We're going to talk about that. Damn ops. And, of course, we have details for G-Day announced as well. I need you to do one thing for me right now. I need you to hit that thumbs up button. If you haven't already, I need you to do it. If you haven't subscribed already, I need you to do it. If you haven't told a friend about this place, I need you to do it. Okay, we're on the search for the sickos, getting ever so closely to 95,000 subscribers. Let's go ahead and hit 100K ASAP. All right, ASAP, not Rocky. I'm talking about 100K tomorrow. Need it done. Jay Will, how did it feel to be a big, bad breaker of news today?
It felt good. I don't do that very often, but yeah. I mean, it was nice. I was first one to it, I suppose. So yeah, it was cool.
Damn near the only one to it. It felt like for a while.
I don't even know that. I didn't see too many Falcons outlets reporting it either.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. This is kind of a big news story for a loss in Georgia staffing and an addition in the Falcons staffing.
I mean, purely for the sake of being able to tie in Georgia football and the Atlanta Falcons in the same headline.
Yeah,
you would think that, oh, that's a shot I need to take. I don't, no matter what the news is.
Nope.
Yeah, pretty cool.
But, yeah, congratulations on breaking that story today. It's big-time stuff. For those of you who don't know, Stephen Drummond is stepping down at UGA to go work alongside Matt Ryan with the Atlanta Falcons. Some people might be like, hey, man, who is Stephen Drummond? That's not Kirby Smart. That's not Mike Bobo. That's not Glenn Schumann. That's not a position coach. Why should I care? Well, Stephen Drummond was the vice president of football operations with the Carolina Panthers as recently as 2022. For those of you who don't know NFL structure, vice president of football operations is basically the second in line to the general manager on the administration side of football operations on the NFL level. Then in 2023, he was hired to essentially be the head football administrator for the University of Georgia. He had some funky name title, but I'm going to tell you what he did at the University of Georgia from my understanding. He was the man in between Kirby and every operation not related to X's and O's, not related to players in and of themselves, but the operation and administration that is required to run a company. That's what college football teams are, by the way. They're organizations, they're corporations. They need administrative figures. This was one of the higher ranking administrative figures. On top of that, he was put in charge to run Glory Glory, which is their new collectives operation over there at the University of Georgia. And it just started up. So that's kind of a blowback here, right? This is someone who was very heavily involved in the startup to that operation. And now as its wheels are getting turned, we're kind of having the driver ripped out of the driver's seat. It will continue. Glory Glory will. I don't know their immediate plans for operations because this was so new in terms of news today. So don't know where they're going. I will tell you this, per my understanding, this has nothing to do with whether or not he liked or didn't like working at Georgia, whether or not it was a success, or whether or not this was one of those stories where he gets an opportunity and Kirby Smart's like, okay, yeah, you can go. No, this was a undeniable offer from the Atlanta Falcons. This was something that could not be said no to, both from an opportunity standpoint and a pay standpoint. And now he is with the Atlanta Falcons.
Fish. And, I mean, it should be noted that Drummond got his start in the NFL.
Correct.
He has ties with the Jacksonville Jaguars, a lengthy experience with the Carolina Panthers.
It's a really, really impressive story arc from a career standpoint if you like careers in football. Mm-hmm. If you pay attention like we do. I have worked my entire life to have a life-standing career around football. So I admire people who have taken paths, very unique paths, to where they are at. Stephen Drummond started as an unpaid intern with the Carolina Panthers. 13 years later was the vice president of football operations. That's a climb, ladies and gentlemen. That is something that you don't see very often in the world of football nowadays. It's kind of like bing-bonging your way all across the corporate ladder, trying to get up, taking one little small step job everywhere else. No, he climbed one corporate ladder the entire way up and got almost to the damn top of it, and now goes back basically to a similar role,
yeah,
in my opinion, with the Falcons now, kind of being the right-hand man to Matt Ryan. It should be noted that this guy handled a lot of the, in my opinion, the discussions with agents, but didn't handle any of the negotiations, if that makes sense, right? Here's how I interpret it, right? Kirby's job and Kirby's staff's job was to identify the players that needed to be got. Stephen Drummond's job and the glory side of things, his job is to figure out how we go about getting those players, right? This side says who, this side says how. You know what I mean? And Drummond was really, really good at figuring out the how to those things. They're going to have to slide somebody in there really, really quickly to keep things rolling as smooth as they were, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, again, really the biggest portion of this news is the fact that his departure occurs while Georgia is really trying to get glory up and going. You know, funny enough how Kirby was talking about, oh, we just need to triple the subscriber count to get some black jerseys, and now one of the creators of Glory gone. Seems a little, I don't know, coincidence?
Disagreements on jerseys.
Just saying. He knew all along.
The straw that broke the camel.
I was surprised that tweet I had didn't go more viral, dude.
Oh, dude. That thing should have banged. I would have retweeted it had it not had a cuss word in it.
Yeah, bro.
I'm trying to, you know.
Using well, dirty
protect,
words?
Well, it's a direct quote from the movie.
Oh, it was a funny tweet.
No, yeah. It is interesting now you think about that of like,
huh.
This comes
you spent just, your entire organization to their pro day, huh? And then stole one of their high ranking.
They better draft three Georgia players this
Dogs
year.
On top.
Otherwise.
Well, you know, there are three Georgia players in this draft that the Falcons kind of need at the positions that they have needs at.
So there's good news here. The bad news is obviously like the glory side of things was ramping up really, really well.
Yeah.
It looked like it was. I don't know what their subscriber numbers are. I have no idea. But it looked like it was moving in a proper direction. That comes to somewhat of a halt, or at least there's a speed bump in that process
for sure.
Now, right? The good news on this side of the fact is that, like, Kirby Smart will never have a true general manager. There will never be anybody whose role it is to actually develop and solve or, like, be the final stamping point on a relationship of a player. So there's nothing that's, like, lost from the roster's going to get worse standpoint. This wasn't somebody, like, losing Courtney Morgan at Alabama would be detrimental.
Okay. Yes.
That guy is heavily involved in who they sign and how they go about signing them, right? We're talking about just eliminating the how. All right, we can figure that out. Who and what we recruit is really, really much more important, in my opinion, than running down the money. Okay. We just got to be nice and sweet talking some boosters to run down the money.
Mm-hmm.
Got to be smart. All right. Got to be a salesman. Mm-hmm. I will say this, just in case anybody's listening. Glory is a premium content strategy. That is their company's plan. If you need any help with that, I might know a guy. I'm just going to throw that out there. David Pollack has some comments you didn't necessarily love.
Oof. Did not like these.
You want to tell the fans and the folks what he has said?
I'll let you introduce it, and then I'll.
So I don't have the exact quotes in front of me.
I'll get them.
All right, but in other words, I'm going to paraphrase it right here. If Gunnar Stockton is the same quarterback, Georgia has no chance to win a title.
Pretty much, yeah.
Then, none.
Then
zero.
Went into detail
can't win it. They're going to be terrible.
About what he needed to do to get better and all these things. So
to me, now, this is how I read this quote of, and listened to this quote of, one, you can tell David Pollack has been on a desk at ESPN because this is a masterful craft of a take where you front load it, you get the sound bite, and then you add the reasoning behind it, because he starts off by saying, if Gunnar Stockton is the same quarterback he was a year ago, Georgia won't have a chance to win a national title. They have no chance. Double down on that part. That's the part that everybody's seeing. Then he goes on to say, Aaron Murray, I believe, rebutted with some, well, you know, we saw some growth from him in the middle of the season, so we already know that he can get better. And Pollack follows up by saying, what you're talking about, yes, you saw it in spurts. I saw him grow. I saw him put more touch on the football. I saw him not try to throw it through everybody's chest, which he has a tendency to do. It's all fastballs. I like some changeups. And the other thing I saw him change arm angles without taking a big windup, which I really, really like, which the dude has plenty of arm strength to turn and flick it. It ain't no thing for him, but I think it's more personality driven with Gunnar Stockton. person than anything else. He's a kid that doesn't want to mess up.
Here's my take. I think everybody who watched Gunnar Stockton last year, or honestly, anybody who ever watched anybody in their first year starting, moving into their year two starting, says something along the lines of, he needs to improve. We all agree. Yeah. Gunnar Stockton needs to get better.
Yeah.
Everybody on this table and on this stage 100% agrees. Everybody listening to this right now agrees. Gunnar Stockton's got to be a better football player in 2026 than he was in 2025. There's no doubt about that. But here's my like whole issue with this debate. Or this they won't win a title no matter what if he doesn't get any better. Did we not just watch what happened? Like, I know Fernando Mendoza won the Heisman Trophy. I know he's going to be the number one overall draft pick. But that is a defensive national title that Indiana just won. And you can't tell me otherwise. They were the best defense in college football. Therefore, they won the national title, or one of the best defenses in college football. The other one was Ohio State. They were damn near close to winning it. The third best defense, I would argue, was Miami. They were pretty dang on close to winning it. Okay? We had a national champion in Indiana who allowed 11.7 points per game. Guys, they gave up three or more scoring possessions in two of their games. Two. That's it. They were a great defense on their way to a national title. This day and age of like, we got to score 45 to win. We got to be the most explosive offense in the history ever to go win a national. It's not true. The game has changed since helmet comms have come in. Possessions have been limited. Pace is slowing down. It's more and more about controlling the controllables and winning within the margins. And that has nothing to do with scoring 45 points or throwing for 4,000 yards.
Thank you. And my biggest issue with this take is not that, oh, it's anti-Georgia, it's anti-Gunnar Stockton. I don't understand why the burden of getting better next season falls completely on Gunnar Stockton. No one, and I feel like there has been mentions of, hey, the defense needs to improve this year. No one has talked about how, hey, Georgia was last in the SEC in sacks this season. Mm. Georgia had a poor defense. Georgia has basically the last two seasons given up a touchdown in its first possessions on defense, just guaranteed no matter who you are, just come and walk the ball down the field for the first 5 minutes. We'll give you 7 points. Kirby Smart has made a joke about that. Kirby Smart was brought onto Georgia to be a defensive head coach. Georgia's most successful seasons have been led by strong defenses. Why all of a sudden are we demanding that the quarterback plays ungodly or at a Heisman level or at a first-round level for this team to be a national title contender?
Even the Heisman Trophy winner didn't throw for 300 yards in a single game.
Yeah. Needed one time. One time was it.
And
did he?
I think it was one game.
299.
I can't remember. I thought I saw a stat.
He did not have 300 yards in a single game.
And even regardless of that, it's not like Gunnar Stockton was just some mid throughout the entire season. You don't beat Ole Miss the first round without Gunnar Stockton. You don't beat Tennessee without Gunnar Stockton. There are a handful of moments where Gunnar Stockton plays absolutely great football for Georgia. Yes, there are things that he needs to improve, and the expectation should be he gets better in his second full year starting. Why no one's hitting the panic alarm and ringing bells about the defense and everyone's saying, Gunnar Stockton's got to get better. If he doesn't do that, Georgia's got no chance. If Georgia's defense doesn't get better and look anything similar to how it has, you know, the first 5 or 6 years Kirby Smart was there, they don't have a chance. It has nothing to do with Gunnar Stockton. I mean, that's the reason, that's the issue I have with the take.
The last three national title winners were all defensive driven. I mean, Michigan, the year they won it was defensive driven. Ohio State was defensive driven. And then this past year with Indiana, they were a defensive driven team. So yeah, I would agree that the like recent history would indicate that if you have a strong defense, if you have one of the best in the country, then odds are you're going to be in contention and win a national title this season. And I agree. Like, I think that the overarching take that everybody should be giving about Georgia's offense is that, and Kirby even talked about it last week, was they want to be more explosive. Like, that should be the ultimate goal for the offense. And some of that does rely on Gunnar Stockton
for sure
improving in his game. Like, he's certainly tied into that, but it also has to do with the fact of, hey, when we have opportunities to take shots, the offensive line has to protect. They have to hold up. Wide receivers, that's a big question. They actually have to get into those opportunities and actually win on those reps. Like, everybody's tied into it. It's not just, hey, Gunnar Stockton, it's all or you, buddy.
Georgia lost two games last season. And in neither of those losses did I walk away thinking, you know, the defense did everything they could today and the offense just failed them. It didn't feel that way after Ole Miss in the Sugar Bowl. It certainly didn't feel that way after Alabama when they walked the ball for the first 9 third downs. Like, until Georgia's defense holds an opponent to less than 20 points and Georgia loses, we can come out and say, hey, the offense losses. 2019 South Carolina is the epitome of this. That defense played a fine game, and Jake Fromm and the offense did not have a good day, and you lost because of it.
Yeah.
That was an offensive loss. I don't put the fact that we gave up 39 points to Ole Miss as that. I don't put the fact that Alabama had 9 for 9 on their first third down possessions. That's not on Gunnar Stockton. The defense needs to get better before we can even think about criticizing Gunnar Stockton. That's my take.
Completely agree.
I thought the overarching obvious take about so-and-so needs to improve is the wide receiver room.
Yeah.
That's fine, yeah. Like, I mean,
those players have to get better.
Yeah, and I'm not mad at the idea that saying there's certain areas where the offense has to improve. That's for sure. I agree 100%. Saying that if that doesn't happen, Georgia has no chance is crazy to me.
You are right in the sense that it's crafted perfectly.
Oh,
100%. Yeah, for sure.
Shut the door and then slightly work to pry it open. Mm-hmm. Breach the door just slightly towards the end. Yeah, that way everybody's like, because, you're misquoting him. You know, you didn't get the full quote.
And because, like, if you just listen to the first part, it sounds like he's crapping on Gunnar Stockton. And then I go and read and listen to the rest of it. I'm like, he's saying all the things that we've said about Gunnar. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, hey, we've got to get better in these areas.
Again, and I have no problems with him criticizing or saying that Gunnar Stockton needs to get better in the areas. It's the fact that nowhere in that conversation did David Pollack, a defensive guy who played defense at Georgia, who takes pride in playing a strong defense, say, hey, this Kirby Smart defense has not been up to standard the last season or two.
Also, this take about offensive linemen not moving people, he didn't watch much Monroe Freeland and Juan Gaston last year because that's what they did.
Mm-hmm.
He moved people constantly in the run game.
Well, we did get one answer.
But he is right. There's not much movement going on at tackle, particularly nowadays.
We did get an answer to one of your burning questions of the offseason.
Yeah.
Gunnar Stockton has a quarterback trainer.
Yeah, QB Country here in Atlanta, right?
QB Country is, there was a video posted. I don't know if it's today, but there was a recent video posted from them of Gunnar Stockton putting in some work.
The main QB Country account?
Yes, the main QB Country account.
Pull this sucker up. Let's go see what we're working on.
Okay.
Pull this video up. Let's see what
we got. Some arm angle work.
Yeah. Quick release work right here up off the ground. All right, we're on the med table. Now we got a PVC pipe working some spinal rotation and dexterity, and then some throws from the ground.
We're not logged into your Instagram.
Yeah, we don't really need it. Okay. I'm looking at it right now.
There's
not much here. No. We're not really working. Or not showing the work. I'm sure we did a lot of work here. This is a lot of, you can't really see it, but he's literally got a PVC pipe and he's working spinal rotation, and then we're on the ground working wrist flicks, literally laying on the back, which I can't tell you how many times I did that as a kid. You probably shot hoops. Mm-hmm. Did you lay down on your bed and work,
all the
work
time.
Release?
Find a spot on the wall.
You got to find the slot with a football, too. Yep. Same thing. He's working, though.
He is.
Hey. He's working. So we have a trainer.
Someone outside of the Georgia football program is working with Gunnar Stockton.
We have a trainer. And this looks like he was in Mobile doing so. So he probably going to spend a week down there, I would imagine.
Probably.
Maybe this is what we're doing. They're not. This was on spring break.
This had to have been old.
This is previously
yeah,
reported.
I'd be shocked if he's doing this.
Working on the little things.
He's dealing with a knee, though.
He got a knee.
He's got a knee.
He got a knee, two nostrils, couple ears, and some eyes.
Some say he might have two knees. Working to confirm that.
Two knees is bad.
He might have two knees.
Double knees? Whew.
If Kirby Smart ever comes in front of the mic and says, yeah, so-and-so's got two knees, don't expect to see them on the field anytime soon.
Jordan Hall had two knees.
Yeah,
unfortunately. Was it knees or was it shins?
It was one knee just above the shin and then another knee just above the shin.
Damn. If you didn't listen to Kirby Smart press conferences and were listening to this, you'd think we're idiots.
He's got an ankle.
You think we're wasting time.
What's your favorite? My favorite is he's got a toe. It's like, Coach, you could say he has turf toe. That's the only possible thing he could have.
Oh, my
favorite. If he's got a toe, it's got to be turf toe.
My favorite is, it's lower body. You know, we'll know more about
lower body.
We'll know more about it later when we talk to the doctors. Like, he hasn't been fully vetted on this.
Well, we got an upper body injury.
He walked in the door.
Got an upper body injury.
Don't have an update at all, even though it's been 2 weeks. Don't know yet.
Yeah, it's a day to day.
Just have to see.
We'll see.
Have to see him at practice.
I'll get to see him in a couple hours. Yeah. We'll see what he's got going on there.
Do you think he knows we know it's BS?
Yes.
Yes.
Or do you
he
think
knows.
He's like? Do you think he walks out of there and goes, "Those dumbasses,
again. Well, boys, I thinking, got them today."
Thinking I'm giving them information. They don't know anything.
They don't know nothing. No, I think he knows that. He knows that we know.
Yeah. Yeah. So we know that he knows that we know that he knows.
Exactly. Speaking of meat availability, there was some today.
Yes, there was.
You were there.
There
How'd they space this for you? Were you sitting there periodically by, you know, just actually, doing nothing? Or did they stack them up?
I had just enough time to write one article, but it wasn't like I ever felt like I was sitting there for an hour.
Okay.
Like, it was pretty good.
That was my fear. When they sent me the range, we were working this morning, but when they sent me the range, I was like, oh, some variance there. But they stacked them up on you.
I got to Buttsmere at 11:15, and I was walking out of the door by 1:10.
Okay.
So they were
And it right started at 12, right?
11:30.
That'll do it.
So the first person we got five players today. We got Ernest Green, Quintavis Johnson, Justin Williams, KJ Bolden, and London Humphreys. And they were asked about a litany of, you know, basic surface level questions about all you can ask come springtime. Got Ernest Green first. He was asked, you know, hey, why did you come back? Typical answer. I've got goals I still want to achieve. Got some things left to do here.
How do you look?
He looked good. He looked good, you know, from a body standpoint.
Any weight movement?
No. I think at this point, like, he's...
We're 5 years in.
Yeah, like, there's not... Yeah, there's not like you're going to get, oh, my God, who is that guy? But he looked like Ernest Green, so that's about, you know... The main thing I took away from this, he was actually, hey, what's it like with Coach Rauscher and all these things? What's the dynamic change there? We're getting more schematic things taught to us. He said they're placing much more of an emphasis on learning the actual scheme as opposed to what your concept is in this position. So that was unique to me, and I feel like that might be honestly helpful, make you that much more malleable as a, hey, we need you to play right tackle today or left tackle. He also said that there wasn't that many differences in that regard.
When you fully understand the why, the changes don't impact you as much as an offensive lineman.
Correct.
So that's important.
One of the recurring themes in this one, Zyke Helton. Love seeing that guy work. He's one of the young freshman guys that's really impressed me. He was asked about Malachi Tolliver stepping up, said that he did a great job stepping up. Got a nickname for Malachi Tolliver. Tolly.
Workshop it. Come on, boys.
You know, I kind of liked it. Said that his goals for 2026 were to leave the dance happy, how to make the offensive more explosive as an offensive line. Said you just take care of what you need to take care of, get your backs to the second level. Basic answers here. Was asked about what's like being the oldest guy in the room. He started, you know, lamenting on, man, time flies. It comes a lot quicker than you expected, but you just try to pass down what you've learned. That was basically all we got from Ernest. Quintavis Johnson was then asked about how, hey, what are your Coach Knight impressions? And
Top three smile.
Yeah.
Top three smile on that guy.
Didn't get a ton of smiles today at him. Was very businesslike, but he and Justin Williams both answered questions about what Coach Knight was like and basically said that he's very technical on and off the field. Justin Williams mentioned that he's had a great relationship. He's already built it up with a bunch of guys there. Said that this was interesting to me. They talked about, you know, what was the first thing he said to you? Said that we're going to win in every category we try to. They have not, technically, from what it sounds to me, is that Coach Knight has not been installing these pass rush concepts just yet. He has placed a major emphasis on stopping the run first. So that was interesting to me of kind of if we have to stop the run first before we can even worry about the pass. So very unique coaching technique from a guy that everyone expected, oh, he's a pass rush specialist. He's going to come in and teach us all these pass rush moves.
Well, he's wearing the G now, Kirby.
Oh, I know. I know, but from the outsider's perspective and from a casual, oh, he's going to coach pass rushing techniques.
Finish the Kirby Smart sentence. You want to be good on third down, be
great on first and second.
There you go.
Was asked about his, you know, Amaris Mims, what his thoughts on him are. Said he reminded him a lot of Gabe Harris, very similar to those two. Said that he played a role in his recruitment, actually, because they had a previous relationship while he was at Auburn, and, you know, they were talking back and forth. So
how'd you pronounce that?
Maris.
I thought I heard Amaris.
It might be Amaris.
How did they pronounce it in the room? Today?
Amaris.
Amaris?
Yeah.
Okay. That's going to mess with my brain. Because you said Amaris Williams, and for some reason my brain immediately said, Amarius Mims? Why were they asked about Amarius Mims?
Yeah. Another recurring theme in this is what the Sugar Bowl was like. Basically, every player that was asked was, yeah, it still hurts. We still use that as motivation. Moving on to Justin Williams. He was asked about what's life like without CJ. Said he's got to be more of a leader, got to attack the reps. He wants to prove that basically he can do it. Said that Nick Abrams is a very intelligent and instinctive player. Mentioned that the energy this year among the roster is a lot different because basically Ernest Green's the only one who's even experienced a national title. I think it's Ernest Green and maybe two to three other guys, but no one even played in that. So there's a lot more, you know, urgency and hunger there.
Who's still on the roster that's got a ring?
Terrell Foster?
Maybe. I know. I think Ernest might be one of the last
Ernest
ones.
Ernest would have one.
Ernest and maybe Terrell Foster.
I'll get an answer.
Oh, Jordan Hall. Correct?
No, Jordan Hall was – he came in 2023.
Yeah, either way. Not a lot of guys left, so there's a different hunger. Impressions of – this was just chef's kiss. Hey, these boys have been media trained. They're prodding, you know, trying to get some, hey, who's so-and-so? Who's the next guy up? Who's the next star? And I believe it was Mark Weiser asked Justin Williams, hey, Justin, you know, you're going up against a lot of young talent, a lot of new guys, a lot of fresh faces. Is there anyone on you on the offensive line that sticks out to you? And the shit-eating grin that Justin Williams gives Mark Weiser before he goes, everybody's sticking out to me. Just perfect. And then goes and lists off all the freshmen that are impressing him and all that. So classic media training.
We missed an obvious one.
Who?
Connor Stockton's got a ring.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, see? So
he does.
And Ja'Cory Thomas has a ring.
But he's not on the roster.
He's not on the roster anymore. Is Cole Spear on the roster?
No. No. He was a senior last year.
That would be it.
Yeah.
Oh, never mind. I thought we were cool, Mark. I thought we were cool.
Hey, we are cool.
I thought we were cool, bro.
Hey, we're cool, Mark. All
I thought
right?
we were cool.
I'm rocking with Mark because Mark's rocking with us, all right?
Is he?
Mark's rocking with us.
Mark's rocking with you?
Hey, Mark is rocking with us.
I get the reference. What player are we talking about here? Oh, well.
Credit where credit is due. That's all I'm going to say.
Hey,
my boy grinding out here. Credit where credit is due.
Hey.
We cool, Mark.
We cool.
All
we
right?
Cool. We cool.
Next time.
We cool.
Next time, Mark.
We cool.
But, yeah, basically the last two players were K.J. Bolden, who he's given you most of all the talking points that you're going to get out of him. Said that, you know, it feels weird being the older guy in the room. Now it happens very quickly. His impressions of the transfers are both of those guys are doing great, learning the playbook. Did not mention anything about them on the field at practice, so that was kind of interesting. You know, obviously Jamari Riddle is supposedly dealing with an injury, we believe. So K.J. was very, very made sure to talk about how they're learning things in the field. We're doing a lot to learn the playbook, so that was kind of something I picked up on. His personal goals, and I feel like this is the biggest takeaway we can have from KJ. He said he wants to be a better leader, but he wants to have better ball skills. He feels like he definitely left a couple of plays on the field last year, which I think what we all would say, and based on what we talked about last season, that happened. So it's good that he recognizes that as well and is working on that. I think that he will probably do a great job of fixing that this
is
year.
Is the biggest shoulda, coulda, woulda? If this happened, this totally changes moment last year. Is there a bigger one than KJ's dropped interception versus Alabama on the first drive?
Yeah.
Yeah. For him specifically?
Yeah.
In general.
Is there a
Daylon's missed interception in the Sugar Bowl?
Oh, yeah.
You get that one?
Oh, yeah.
The Daylon missed interception. Hindsight.
How about the Donnie Glover missed block on the fourth and two?
Yeah.
In that same game? Yeah.
Hindsight, anything that happened.
Nate Frazier's fumble in that football game.
Yeah. Well, there are quite a few of those.
Hindsight,
games are tight, Jonathan.
They are.
But at the end of the day, like, Georgia goes 12 in the regular season. That's not going to change the Sugar Bowl outcome. Like, Sugar Bowl is the big. Like, Daylon catching that interception would have changed everything.
Buddy, the pain on his face when I asked him that at the combine, he was like,
I think you wanted to walk off the podium.
Yeah. It had to be the only one that remembered that because we had just got done watching it.
And the fact that he was like, I did everything right but catch it. Right, I mean, he sniffed it out from the
dragged
beginning.
Dragged the toes and everything.
London Humphreys was also a lot of basically similar stuff. He said that the main talking point I got away from this was he's trying to give Isaiah Kenyon advice as a transfer player, not just a wide receiver. Obviously, Isaiah Kenyon, is a very talented wide receiver.
Talk of the town.
Yeah, supposedly going to be a star this year, Georgia. I'd love to see that as well. Kind of just giving him advice on what it's like to be a transfer in this program. But other than that, typical media-trained answers, nothing crazy. So those are my notes from the media availability.
Lovely. Hey, that boy Christian Kirby, give him three.
Oh, wait, let me
Yes, please.
London Humphrey said one more thing that was kind of unique. He said, you don't learn positions at UGA, you learn concepts. which goes back to what Phil Rauscher was saying, because he was asked about, hey, you're a versatile guy, you can move in the Z in the slot, and he goes, well, they teach you concepts first, they don't teach you positions, which makes it very easy. So everyone's learning everything, supposedly. That doesn't mean they're gonna play it. Doesn't mean they're gonna play it, but everyone's learning everything. So Sakovi White-Helton should be able to line up at X and know what's happening, even though it might
not kind of work counterintuitive to what Kirby Smart has told us about cross training first year players.
Yeah. I mean,
so I don't know. I've never gone into a system and been like, it's brand new to you, we're gonna give you two positions to learn.
Well, that's what he's saying. You don't get positions, you get concepts.
Yeah, but you're learning the concepts of the position that
correct.
You're playing.
Correct.
You know?
Okay.
I got Dragon called. I got the clear out route on the slot. You know what I mean?
Hey, man.
That's kind of how you memorize
London,
it.
London said it, man.
London did say it. I think my favorite thing he said is the, what do you call it, a Pop-Tart game?
Oh, a donut game.
Donut game. It's wake up, eat a donut, play a game.
Yeah.
I love that. All right. Appreciate you for that, Kirby. What do we want to do next? We want to talk about details for G-Day. I think people are a little frustrated with this.
Yeah, I think it is something that probably needs to be addressed. And look, it's very obvious that the spring game in college football, not just Georgia, is not what it once was. Back in the day, spring games were an opportunity to kind of get the fans warmed up, get you a first look at, you know, what the roster looks like, get people excited, give you that little taste of, these are what Saturdays in the fall are going to be like. It's kind of not that anymore. To a certain degree, it will be that for Georgia. For those who don't know, G-Day will be April 18th. That's a Saturday this year. Kickoff at 1 p.m. Some of the changes, it will not be nationally televised. This is the second year in a row that that's the case. I think that's the incentive to do this, because they're going to charge you $10 per entry, which it used to be free. There were times where it was $5. Ticket prices have varied from...
Wasn't there a time period where if you just brought a canned good, you could get it for free?
That's also correct. So some people are kind of upset about the fact that to see basically what is a glorified scrimmage that no one will be even paying attention to halfway through is now a $10 admission price. But unfortunately, that is kind of the way that college football works nowadays. Like, you have to squeeze every dollar you can out of the fans.
I get one of two responses from this. I get... shut up, broke boy, get your money up. Or, how dare y'all do this to the fans? You keep stretching this out. There is no in-between here.
Mm-hmm. No, and I mean...
every time, and I do understand that fan's standpoint.
For sure.
Every time I turn around, your hands out asking me for more money, buddy, I'm slap broke.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I get it. I mean, like...
So,
yeah, I mean, for a lot of people, there's a big portion of this fan base where this is the one game a year that they get to take their family to, and it's a very affordable trip for them. And I know it's $10, but, hey, if you got a family of five, that's $50. You know, some people can't afford to spend the $50.
Yeah, it's an extra $50 that you're going to have to spend, not to mention food and travel.
Food,
and
everything.
You're going to go to the bookstore, and you're probably going to get a Georgia shirt or something like that. So, I mean, I totally get the frustrations of, hey – this used to be something that was free. This used to be a very, you know, casual event. Now it just some feels like it's once again. But I don't think that's – you can't be mad at the university for that.
Yeah.
That's a college football program trying to adapt to what the absolute machine of college football is. You have to make money.
They're just trying not to lose money. Mm-hmm. They're not making money. Even at $10 a pop, they're not making money.
You have to –
the operational cost on running a game day event at Georgia is – in the hundreds of thousands of dollars.
You have to increase your bottom line to the point where you can afford to. So at that point.
I mean, for Christ's sakes, every worker in the building negates two tickets that came in.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
From a salary standpoint and a benefit standpoint.
Right.
Right.
So, I mean, they're trying to make sure they're not losing or making as much money by the end.
Every
being as
police
profitable.
Officer you see walking around the stadium at Sanford is time and a half. They're getting paid their regular salary wages overtime.
On the bright side, someone's going to stream it on Twitter. You have that.
I don't know if they'll stream it because the snipers will get them from the top, but they'll put it up.
Or last year.
Were they streaming it?
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was just an upload.
Nah, people were straight up basically streaming the game. Or were streaming the game.
Love that.
But, yeah, there's always clips, too. You're going to see the highlights.
Yeah, I will not be doing that here.
No.
We got asked for it last year. I was like, buddy, you want me to get thrown up out of that building? I'll do that right away. Yeah, let's get right after.
You can go read the transcribed version over on Bulldogs on SI.
Yeah. And I remember, you can go get the live updates.
You get the print
in bullet point format over on SI.com.
There were even people that were like, film it and then do a film breakdown.
Yeah. Let me get right on that.
Give us the all 22 of Georgia's spring game.
Just put it on the Patreon.
Break it down.
Do you know how ignorant I was when I first got into this business? I thought that I was like, you know what? I'm a film guy. I'll just put a tripod in the
press box.
I'll get my own all 22. My boss was like, are you out of your mind?
Yeah.
Ooh, they probably did
it's
not.
It's like one of the first things they tell you when you get in the press box of like on the card. It's like, do not record. Mm-mm. You cannot record this. Mm-mm.
Don't cheer. Don't record.
Yep. But I mean, you can have a little camera.
Unless you're a Florida Gator beat reporter.
People do not follow that first rule.
No, they don't.
No.
Do not follow that first rule.
Who's the worst?
What
beat reporting base is the worst about cheering for their team?
Florida.
It's Florida. I think
here's
Florida.
The weird thing, like, though. Florida just talks the entire time.
Yeah. Well, and that is a very weird press box where we're intertwined with those folks. Everywhere else we go, it's like Georgia folks, Tennessee
and
folks.
And also, like, and this is not a shot at that program, there hasn't been a year that I've covered the Georgia-Florida game where the Florida beat genuinely is excited or feels good about
that. Yeah, most of them
program.
Are up there just shit-talking the coach.
Yeah.
Like, and that's pretty much what was happening at the Florida game. Mm-hmm. My issue is when every single play has loud commentary, and it especially bothers me when your loud commentary is often wrong.
There is one, according to you guys, there's one local beat reporter at the Georgia space that is notorious for that. He shall be named or unnamed.
Yes.
But every time we come out of a game, you guys are like, you ain't going to believe what so-and-so said today.
Yeah.
It's funny.
And there's also one beat reporter that the moment he notices someone's not there, the first inclination is to tell the box, hey, start searching arrest reports. Don't love that one either.
Well,
don't love that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I can say about every one of those beat reporters, they love the hot halftime hot dogs.
Oh,
dude.
Yeah.
Dude, there was one. I don't remember what game it was. It was one of the earlier games, a lesser game. And I guess the rumor was that there were no hot dogs. Bro, that press box looked like the Situation Room at the White House. Like, they're all like, have you heard
scattering.
This? Have you heard this? It's true. Like, they're walking to the kitchen and checking, like, behind the counters. Like, they love those halftime hot
all
dogs.
All for some boiled water dogs.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's the most pristine hot dog, but I do find myself looking forward to a hot dog.
It's got a tad bit rubberiness to it.
Yeah.
You bite into the Athens hot dogs. Got a little bit of a...
They don't charge in the press box, but out in the stadium, they properly charge you for that quality of hot dog. I think it's like $2.50. $2.50 for a hot dog, you can't find that anywhere now at sporting events.
Not bad. Yeah, but the no TV got them hot. The $10 got them hot. The no TV thing, I don't understand.
It's to get asses in seats.
You think so?
I think that's what it is.
You can't watch it, so you have to come.
Like, you want to watch a G Day game? Come pay $10 for it.
Because there's no need to hide these things anymore.
I mean, imagine if Georgia said, we're going to televise this, but if you want to come watch it, you pay $10. Like, I would have been like, I'll stay home. I'm good. Like, I've seen G-Day before. I've been in that atmosphere. It pales in comparison to anything on a normal Saturday. I'll watch it from the comfort of my home.
There is an aspect of I can't miss it because I won't get it.
Yeah.
No on-demand
You're about to – you would be missing your one opportunity in the offseason to watch Georgia football or, like, fresh Georgia football.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like, I'll just watch the rerun.
No.
This is it, man.
Do y'all want an eval of a first-round draft pick, or do y'all want to watch the next Georgia offensive commitment?
Let's watch the commit, too.
All right, let's do it. This is Ty Johnson. Ty's dad, I don't know his name. Ty's dad remember. Played at Georgia.
He has a legacy.
Played with Kirby Smart?
Yes.
Okay, this is like the fourth kid that Georgia's done this with, right? Pierce Sperlin, both the Lucky Boys, and now this.
And Bobo.
So fifth. Well, he didn't play with Mike.
No, he didn't play with him. So you're talking about guys
I'm talking about guys that Kirby played with who have sons that now play for Kirby.
Oh, okay, I got you.
This
now.
Is the fourth iteration of that, right?
Isn't there a son of a running back that is on this roster?
Not the current roster.
I don't believe so. My memory's serving both the Lucky Boys, Pierce Sperlin, and then this one. Pierce Sperlin's dad and Kirby were fraternity brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
This was back in the day when you could play.
Are you thinking of Andrew Beard?
No,
Garrison Hurst?
Kirby didn't play with Hurst either way. So.
No. Yeah.
All right. And Beard is still at Prince Avenue right now, and I don't know if he's going to end up at Georgia, to be honest with you. All right. Let's look at this tape. I haven't watched this. I'm expecting some road graders. All right. Now, what I will tell you about this kid is he went through a massive growth spurt. I think going into the summer, into this year, he was 6'3". Now he's a full 6'6", like 295 pounds. So it's a big kid. I'm expecting to see him bury some MFers on this tape. And we are number 72, I can tell you that right now. Okay. We're number 72 there. We got good pad level right here, getting up underneath that chin strap.
Oh, Lord.
Taking them for a ride. Yeah, we're going to see a lot of flatbacks in this wishbone.
Yeah, not a lot of pass protection.
No. Hey, there's another kid. I think his name's Carter Jones. They just had him in for an unofficial visit. He's from Virginia. That's another kid, 3-star. I think Georgia's really, really high on him. He's never once in a high school football game gotten into a kick slide. not once in his career. Now, it looked good at the Under Armour event that I was at. He looked like he could handle it. I worry about those kids when they come up to college football.
So they probably had been working on it, but not in game. Like,
yeah, I mean, every 6'6", 300-pounder that's in a triple option better be kick sliding in his off days, because he ain't going to be in the wishbone forever. We're a trade tackle right here. We're on the other side. We got tackle over going on right there. Bam! Oh, man, I would have liked to see you get him up off of his feet.
It takes some time, but you get to those.
Oh, he gets to cooking?
Yeah. Okay. He gets to some – you want to see some finish.
Timmy should have been thrown a good 6 feet.
We get some of those.
Okay. That's the South Carolina logo. So we're – okay. All right.
The foot drive on this is impressive.
Yeah. Uh-huh. All right, up to the second level. We got good effort. I love that. All right, we threw Timmy. Yeah. We threw Timmy on the sideline over there. Okay. We're in tackle over again. I mean, we're lined up as a tight end right there. Buried. Mm-hmm. A little cowboy collar on the fullback right there, on the B-back.
Mm.
Oh, that's a wide split. What's going on there?
Interesting. I think he just lined up wide.
Yeah, I think he just lined up wrong.
I was
going to
say, you think he's pulling, but.
I thought so, too. I mean, we got to wall off that guy in front of us at 3-tech. I don't know why we're so wide right there. Oh, hey, he was lined up in a head-up 5, wasn't he, Christian?
Yeah.
So maybe we're widening alignment because he's dumb and he'll wide with us. Do you know what I mean? We're on a backside cutoff. If he wants to line up head up, I'm going to give a 2-yard split because he's a dumb.
Yep.
I'm just going to line him up away from the ball. This happens, guys. You're laughing over there. Defensive linemen are taught sometimes, hey, you're in a 2-eye. So wherever the 2-eye's at, they'll just keep expanding with you. Mm-hmm. So if it's to my benefit, I'm going to keep expanding you. So I think that's might what happened right there.
That is very much a technique that they teach in wing T and
manipulation of splits.
Yep.
I liked his head there. We got our head across. We didn't finish the rep. That's okay. We did on somebody else, but that's not our job. Our job is the guy who made the play.
Yeah.
Back at right tackle. We might see a kick slide here.
Okay.
We got some feet fire there.
Didn't
We're a guard all day, no doubt.
Oh, yeah, for sure. We're moving inside. Oh, another note from availabilities. Apparently, Zyke Helton is also taking some reps at center.
Yeah. I mean, he's 6'1.5". Makes sense. He kind of has to. If he wants to play on Sundays, he's going to have to be Willie Lumpkin or Billy Lumpkin. Who's the kid from North Carolina? Willie Lampkin?
Yeah.
Is that his name?
Yeah, Lampkin. Yes.
I think he's going to be like that. I think he's going to be some just freak athlete at 6'1", playing center. This reminds me of a lot of the takes that they took last class.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
6'6 and safe. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Low.
Also, if this kid ever transfers out, it will be because we told him, hey, you probably need to go get some playing time somewhere else.
Sure. Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And those are – I think that's the balance you have to find. And it's a good thing that, you know, programs like Georgia have. I don't know if other programs have this where, you know, some of the other big programs, the Blue Bloods like Texas, have this from an in-state perspective. But 3-star kids want to go to Georgia because they want to play at Georgia. Still, it's still there. Mm-hmm. And that's very valuable nowadays because the bottom of your roster better be quality enough to give you good reps but not cost any money.
And, like they did last year, for the Ty Johnson that we take, that also means we can go out there and find another caliber football player like him but got some flair to him, just maybe needs to be shaped up a little bit.
I gotta get my hands on this 2027 offensive line class. I gotta see what are they actually prioritizing. There's a lot of names in the state in 27 that they're interested in. I saw a stat from On3. It said 45 players inside the top 300 from the state of Georgia, more than any other state in the country in 2027. So and 2028, I think they're loaded in both classes in the state of Georgia. So it reminds me a lot in 27 and 28 of that KJ Bolden year, where I remember writing an article where it was like, hey, if Georgia signs the top 25 players in the state of Georgia alone, they'll have a top 2 class.
Jeez.
that, I mean, that's a very, very unique advantage that Kirby has over a lot of these other, you know, programs. Like Texas and Georgia, and that's really it right now. They're kind of in their own echelon of consistently producing high-end blue chippers at a year-to-year basis. And Georgia's per capita numbers are ridiculous.
Insane.
They're insane from a standpoint of the amount of humans that are here relative to the amount of humans that are going to go play Division I football. And it's kind of a catch-22. Georgia doesn't have to deal with this, but we talked about this last night off camera. Schools like Georgia Tech and Georgia State and Georgia Southern and Kennesaw State, I feel like, are at a disadvantage in this place or in this state because the state gets so over-recruited by other schools.
Mm-hmm.
Where Kentucky will come down here and offer a kid that 10 years ago probably should have been playing at Georgia Southern.
Right.
Or probably should have been playing at Kennesaw. But now he's getting an offer from Wake Forest. Mm-hmm. Or now he's getting an offer from Kentucky or whatever. And that kind of blows the spot up. So there's that. Monroe Freeling?
You want these notes? Let's talk about it.
Got some good notes here. I was both right and not heavy enough on this throughout his entire career. I feel like we were the first place that was like, hey now, guys, this left tackle that y'all got playing here, this number 57, he's really, really good. I remember coming after the, I think it's 2024 against Tennessee when he's blocking he who shall not be named, the Falcon.
JPJ.
Yeah, that guy. And then also blocking Anthony or Joshua Josephs.
Mm-hmm.
And doing so kind of banged up. And I remember watching it and coming back and watching film and being like, telling you, say, hey, I think this Monroe kid's going to be like a top 10 pick. Like he is something crazy to watch him move. And he's turned out to be exactly that throughout his career. Here are my notes. I take a lot of like play breakdown notes. And then the staples, in other words, the final points are written in red in my notes. So I'm going to read you the red notes. Gets a little over his skis, but it's with violent intentions. I watched Maua Noah, and then I watched the Spencer Fano kid, and then I watched Monroe Freeling, and then I had to go back, rewatch the Fano tape just to go into the bathroom and throw up.
Oh.
That's the way I felt about how hard the first guy played, how I don't care about this, it looked on tape from Fano, and then watch Monroe Freeling care about the sport again, watching him play on tape. There's a play against Alabama, guys, where he's a backside cutoff, he's pinch-hinging on counter, and he's completely 25 yards from the play. But the ball's running down the field, and we're like a 20, 25-yard ripper. He runs down the field just to do a walkover, Iverson step over a dead body from Alabama. He sprints downfield just to stunt on a player he had nothing to do with. But that's what he's about. He loves football. You can see it's obvious on his film. I love that about him. What's very weird, though, is that he is always on the ground. I don't know how to explain this, and I don't know what it is. I think it's through just nothing but violent intentions. Like, he's trying to kill everybody, so he's playing so far out over his toes, playing so aggressive, and he ends up falling on the ground. But here's what keeps – it's messing me up over and over again, because in my life as a football person, go to a football practice when you have an opportunity to, a high-level football practice. The number one thing you will hear come out of a coach's mouth the moment a body hits the ground, stay up. Stay up. Great athletes, stay up. Great athletes, stay up. And it is so true. I told these guys the other day, I don't think I could find you a clip of Trent Williams falling on the ground. I'm not talking about being tripped where his toe was stepped on and now we fall over. I'm talking about he was playing outside of control and fell on the ground. It doesn't happen to the best of the best athletes. That has to get figured out from Monroe. And this is why it's so weird to me when I read you this. 6'7", 315 pounds, 4.93 in the 40, a 1.71-10 split, 34-inch vertical, 9'7" broad, 35-inch arms, and 11-inch hands. And, by the way, mom's a yogi. I say this all the time. This matters. He's 6'7", and people are going to look at him like, how's he play that low? Well, he's been bending, stretching, doing downward dog the last vinyasa since he was 5 years old. Okay, so being this tall and being this limber, all right, and being this fluid, it makes no sense while we're always on the ground. We got to figure that out. Here are my grades. Here's what I graded it out. Frame, athleticism, foot fire. How quick them feet fire into that ground. It's really, really important. Hat, right? Where's your hat at when we make contact? Are we over our feet or too much? Are we in a good position? Are we in good body alignment, right? Where's your hat at? Where are your hands at when you strike? How good are your hands? Are we an independent hand fighter? Do we have thunder in our hands? Are we a hand placer? Or are we a hand striker? It's really, really important in the offensive line world. Feet. Now, this is technical, right? Not foot fire, not how fast they fire. But, hey, do we take the right steps? Are we a false stepper? Or do we constantly have good tech in our feet? And then the other one, most important, finish. Do we play the game like we love it? Now, finish is an all or nothing score. You're either a non-applicable or you get that full five. He's a full five for me. All right, I love the way this guy plays. I talked about him a couple weeks ago on this network from a standpoint of my biggest fear with regards to Georgia's offensive line. It's not that you lost a first-round draft pick, because I think Juan Gaston is that, right? I think he's that talented. My biggest fear for Georgia is that when you watch that all 22 from last year and you imagine and you envision being in the meeting room on Sundays, there is someone to point to. There is someone on that silent copy to look at and say, this is how it's done. Look how this guy is playing. Look how much harder he is playing than the rest of you guys. And then that, by nature, lifts the entire collective group. That's got to, somebody's got to step into that role this year, because it was undoubtedly 57 last year. So that's got to get fixed, or at least addressed. So there's that. Overall score, 4.80. He is my second highest rated tackle, only behind Francis Malinoa.
Probably, there's potential he gets drafted that way. It seems like that's how people are talking about him.
It should be.
He'll be the second tackle off the board.
It's these two and then the rest for me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you
can't get me to buy in on the Caden Proctor stuff. I can't.
I have seen some mocks where he's going in the top 10. He's tackle one, but, you know, that's mock drafts. Who God knows what's going to happen when it actually comes to the first round.
I wouldn't be able to pass up the floor of Malinoa.
That's fair.
He just doesn't get beat. I told you guys today, I charted 185 snaps. He got beat three times. And one of them, it was like, we didn't really lose the rep, but you lost. That's not your standard for a rep. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
So I'm really, really high on that.
But no, I mean, I do think that is an interesting question that you pointed out to, if this guy was kind of the attitude driving force behind that offensive line this year.
And quietly too.
Yeah. It wasn't like oh my gosh, he's the boisterous, he's the getting in people's faces. Like, there is that going to be an absence, but I do think the benefit of that is, like you said, it's kind of quiet at the same point.
Like, we got to get out of this trend, and I'm glad Malachi was a 3-year superstar. We got to enjoy that. I'm glad Brock Bowers was this. We got to get out of this. Like, I feel like Trayvon Walker gave me 12 good games. Mm-hmm. I feel like Amarius Mims gave me 9 good games. I feel like George Pickens gave me 10 good games, right? I feel like we got 14 great games from Monroe Freeling. You know, I feel shortchanged on some of these superstars. Oh, yeah, these guys are great. Like Monroe Freeling, he'll never be Andrew Thomas for me. But, man, he's got opportunity 10 years from now to be like one of the greatest to ever play at Georgia at this position. That could happen.
Yeah.
And we got a year and a half, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't even get a full year this year. Mm-hmm. He was hurt the first half of the season.
Right. I mean, but that is kind of what speaks to Georgia's talent and depth. Like, Monroe Freeling got reps in 2023, but who was he going to start over?
I feel like C.J. Allen gave me 3 great ones.
He did.
2.5.
But even
Two and a half. Well, that was because first year, I mean, how are you going to get on the field?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying, though. It's like, it's that way for a lot of these guys where, yeah. I mean, the George Pickens one is the George Pickens, obviously, like, shortened year in 2020, and then you tear your ACL in 2021. Like, yeah, I understand why you can feel cheated over some.
And a pectoral strain there.
Well, yeah, I mean,
it's just too much bench presser from George Pickens, you know.
You know,
notorious heavy lifter.
They told him. They said, "No, George, don't put that another 45 on
you
there.
You can't do that, George.
No,
your pecs look a little tight today,
George. It's Thursday. We don't need to be maxing out bench press." And he said, "No,
I got to do it.
Got to do it anyway."
Ooh, ah, my pec. Not gonna be able to play against Florida this week. Sorry.
How many people do you think just heard that story? Oh, that's what happened.
What do you mean? That's what that was Kirby Smart.
Yeah,
told us
I mean, right. But like that exact interaction.
Yeah.
But no, it's fine. I do get what you're saying though about how you feel cheated from.
Maybe they were doing the slow to a 2x4 plate and, you know, real controlled and then pop a titty. You know?
Damn.
It'd be happening. I mean, is that not what happened? We popped a pectoral muscle that is in your male breasts. Yay or nay?
I suppose. I don't know if I'd claim it as that, but sure.
You think George Pickens has been under a bench press since?
I'm sure he
has. I'm sure he has.
Maybe mandatory.
It's been 6 years.
I'm sure he's doing something. I mean, he's getting in the weight room every now and then, I'm sure.
So to talk about more about this, the attitude driver, who do you think would you put as a candidate for that? Because I think some people are saying Donnie will be that.
Yeah, he's got to be. To me, it has to be him.
So you can't even rely on a freshman. Because all we've heard right now coming into this, and I know that Daniel Calhoun is also up for the spot. We don't know if Zyke Helton's going to be a starter yet. But everything I've heard is this guy's a high motor. This guy doesn't quit. This guy goes balls to the wall every single time. Like, can a true freshman be that, hey, here's the road grader, here's the energy guy?
Yeah, I mean, if he earns a spot. I think we are in an era where, I mean, even if you are 18, I mean, at Georgia, you're still one of the you're one of the older people on the roster. Like, wasn't last year like 49% of the roster was an underclassman?
Yes.
So, what's it matter? You know, what does age even matter nowadays?
Right.
On that roster,
Graham Houston's rocking 69 now.
Nice.
You can't be doing that and not be one of these.
By the way,
rock it proudly.
Leland said maybe Donnie's not going to 58. Maybe he's staying at 63.
Okay.
Interesting.
That was one of those. Put him in a fake number at practice today.
Could be.
Probably could. Yeah.
Right?
Could be. Who knows?
Let's get the local beat reporter just all buzzed.
No Donnie?
I kid you not. Within 10 seconds of them handing us the roster and being like, all right, you guys are going in now. He said, like, we'll give you we got about 5 minutes before we go in. 30 seconds go by. Here's the roster. All right. Go do practice. Like, it was a masterful execution. They knew what they were doing. It is interesting to watch how.
Well, you know, if you guys would stop going out there and scouting his depth chart so much, he'd let you go out there all the time. He'd let you post up in practice if you'd stop writing about who's starting where.
Well, I understand Coach Smart's sentiment of that. We all know that's not true, though.
Probably not.
we could be out there have done nothing, Kirby Smart. Get out of here, media. We don't want you here.
You think he knows that we know?
I think he knows that we know. I think we know that he knows that we know.
I think I know that I'm done for the day.
I think so.
And tomorrow, I got something tomorrow afternoon. Something. I got to figure it out. We got to work in the morning and then get out of here by 1 o'clock tomorrow. It's nothing that I texted you.
Oh, okay.
If you're looking for that. I don't know what it is right now.
Okay.
But it's something.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Something. All right. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Hit that thumbs up button on your way out. I love you. Bye.
What is it? Oh.